to the Downright Upright Show, the place to go to hear out loud and proud what Minnesotans are thinking. And I am your host, Philip Anthony. Thank you so much for tuning in. We love you, and we hope everyone is doing fantabulous. And as you know, fantabulous means fantastic and fabulous. Put together twice as nice, saves time. Okay, so before I introduce my amazing co-hosts, I just want to say something about a friend of mine named Stuart Devon, who was a guest on my show. He works at MCN6. He's a director, and he's having a community mixer every Monday of every month. And the first Monday of the month will be Women's Night. Second Monday of the month will be LGBT Night. Then the third will be Men's Night. And the fourth will be Everyone's Night. And it's just a regular mixer. So try to go to MCN6. Look it up on online. And now, as you know, it is the first Saturday of the month. So I have co-hosts today. My two amazing co-hosts. They're going to say hi. My first co-host is Austin Ballhagen.
Hello.
Yay. My second co-host is Matt Amundson.
Hey. Whoop, whoop.
No such order. No particular order. Nope. They're just amazing. I can't introduce them at the same time because then you wouldn't know.
You could. That'd be a trick to watch.
That'd be a trick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Blended names.
So, by the way, what's new with everybody? Everybody's doing well?
Yeah. We did it. Austin did a quick, hey, what are you up to? Like, neither of us really have anything going on. It's just like, just living life. And life is good. So, nothing to complain about.
Yeah.
You know, I guess just celebrating that we're still living life.
We're boring queers, aren't we?
No, not at all. I'm never bored.
No, I don't mean
Although we did start something. That convo with, you were talking about landscaping.
Yeah.
So, we might kind of fall into the boring queer.
But to who, though? Because I'm interested. I'm excited for it. I'm just not excited for all the money I got to drop on.
Were you one of those sourdough people during COVID?
No. One of my brothers is, though, like hardcore.
Oh, you did?
But not me. He gave me some of his starter, and I killed it immediately. So apparently you can't kill it, but I did.
You must have killed it. You always kill it.
Not in that way. This time was bad.
Anyway, we're going to start the show on a downer, and then we're going to try to lift it up a little bit as we go along. I can't believe this is happening again. So I'm going to bring this up, and I want your feedback. We're going to talk about abortion again. Abortions will soon be outlawed in Arizona, whatever, wherever you're from, in almost all cases except if the childbearing person is at death's door and that exact point in pregnancy is even unclear. The state Supreme Court ruled that Arizona should follow a restrictive abortion law dating back to the 1860s,
right,
before women could vote and before black people were emancipated. This is where they want to go in Arizona. I'm not kidding you, by the way.
No.
Since December of...
Sounds like a joke.
Yeah, it does. It's sad, but, since December of 2022, Arizona doctors have been allowed to provide abortions up to 15 weeks into pregnancy based on a lower court's interpretation of the state laws. But the state Supreme Court now says Arizona should follow a law banning abortion in almost all cases. It makes no exceptions for rape or incest and makes performing an abortion punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison. Oh, my God. Lastly, when the Arizona legislature wanted to vote on a bill to repeal the court's decision, the Republicans wouldn't even put it up on the floor for a vote. And they were applauding loudly and laughing as if it was a big joke. Let's talk about this. This is really sad. Start with Austin, since this is something she knows quite a bit about, this issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that we're having this conversation again.
I
feel like last show was the only show that we've not had, hey, this is happening in this state once more. It is a Civil War era law, and so there was a situation in Arizona where you had these two conflicting laws, and in an attempt to reconcile them, the Supreme Court decided to go with the far more extreme, I think it's 1863 or 1864 law. One bit of good news, the Arizona Attorney General has said she's not going to prosecute people for this. She's not going to bring charges against people that are service providers. But, and you touched on this, basically this is saying, you, as you put it, cannot seek these services until you are at death's door. And that is really hard to define in a pregnancy.
Yeah, what's death's door? You have to be like, in deep sepsis? I mean, what is the definition?
It sounds like it's supposed to be objective. It's very subjective.
It's very subjective. It's very vague. And we're running into, if we look at the case in Kansas where you have, you know, a woman seeking medical care, she was at quote-unquote death's door, and you've got hospital providers calling attorneys to say, hey, can we do this or not do this? That just seems so totally in opposition to the Hippocratic Oath of do no harm.
Oh, my goodness.
It's horrifying. And this is part of the whole broader ridiculousness of laws surrounding restricting access and accessibility to abortion, because it's really hard to define when and where and how that's a decision made between the person that's carrying that pregnancy and their physician.
Why do childbearing people have to be hanging off the edge of the cliff before then the doctor would intervene? That's not safe.
Mm-hmm. It's not at all.
It's not safe, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought you were pro-life people out there that like this idea. You know, this is not pro-life at all,
no,
if you ask me.
It's not.
And it's a fantasy land. And it's a fantasy land so that they can say, see, we're not totally unreasonable. But the truth is that you are. When you put these restrictions in place, it absolutely is.
It is.
And it's mm-hmm. complete fantasy to think that you can say, well, hey, we want to have these restrictions, but we're going to allow these exceptions. It's just not reality. It doesn't align.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But according to this, when I was reading it about the prison sentences, I wonder if the provider would get a larger sentence than the woman? I mean, or it's the same for both?
I don't know.
They didn't specify that detail. So isn't that crazy? You're a doctor trying to save a woman's life. You save her life. Okay. You aborted a fetus. Time for jail. It's five years. I mean, come on, man.
Prioritize the unborn fetus over the mother. It's like that's a big ask. And there are a lot of things that need to be taken into account to make a decision like that, especially just to create just a big blanket law like this. I think the question that's been running around in my head with this is, what's the whole purpose behind this? Or like what's driving this? Is it this mentality of let's roll back to simpler times? Or is it just following a certain religious values, you know, or beliefs? Is it trying to meet the needs of certain stakeholders? Like who exactly is this serving, and what exactly is the purpose behind making a decision like this?
All of the above, maybe, right, Matt?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I guess the conglomeration of those ideas is all very, very troubling. Like I guess it makes more sense. You know, when there's an issue, what's the best way to deal with it? Let's confront it head on and have a discussion. This seems very much like, well, this is what's decided, and you can have your opinions, but we're just gonna keep moving past it. I feel like this is a perfect example of how our judicial system has so many flaws and holes in it that just can't be penetrated for whatever reason. And when you have the governor saying, well, I'm not going to adhere to it anyway, that makes me relieved. But also I'm like, that's a breakdown of this whole system.
But what happens,
you know,
if the party changes in Arizona?
Exactly.
What if it's no longer a Democratic state?
Then what?
Then what? Then the women are just going to die.
I don't get it.
You know?
I don't get it.
And where in the Bible, first of all, when everybody brings up this religion stuff, where in the Bible, please tell me.
Talk about subjectivity again.
No, but yeah, I know, Matt. But please show me. I would love somebody to show me. And I ask people, please write me, downrightuprightshow@gmail.com, where it says that when the egg and the sperm meet, that's when life begins. Because that's not what it says in the Bible. What it does say is life begins at first breath.
Also, can you tell me?
When God breathes life into the baby when they're born.
Can you tell me too, though, where in our United States system, our governmental system, does it say we need to follow the Christian Bible to make any of our laws and decisions?
Yeah,
that makes even less sense to me. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I thought it was the Constitution.
Or for healthcare, for that matter.
Absolutely.
Mean, it absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Matt, tell the Supreme Court that. Because they're using the Bible.
They don't seem to be listening to anybody except for themselves, so I'd rather not.
Well, and whoever's paying Clarence Thomas's bills.
Oh,
I mean,
my goodness.
You know.
But he never notice he never recuses.
Lots of people.
Yeah.
he never recuses himself.
No.
His wife is deep embedded into Trumpanzee land.
Yeah.
And there's nobody saying, hey, you know, you need you probably should recuse yourself. Your wife is like, you know, having tea with you know who, you know? I mean, it's crazy, man. Yeah. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, they overlooked two other Supreme Courts. It was buttressed by, it was Roe and Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Roe in 73, I believe. 72, 73. I always
Roe
get the...
Roe was 73.
73. And then Casey was 91, I think. Something like that.
I was a baby. I don't remember.
I was a baby too. Anyway, but the point is, when you go to first year of law school, double precedent is like, okay, you're done now. You know,
mm-hmm.
means that this is the law. And they just came in, looked at the Bible, and said, you know what? We're going to switch it. We're going to use the Bible instead of the Constitution. Craziness.
Yeah.
It is crazy. Anybody else want to talk about this issue, or should we move on?
I'm going to get too mad, so.
Yeah, I'm very mad.
No,
I'm very mad.
There's always a lot to say in this issue. More than happy to dive into it. I think it's something that we're all going to, you know, it's interesting. Both of you said, you know, here we are at it again. I think it's more like still.
Yeah.
This is going to continue to be an issue forever and forever, amen. And it's coming to this, there's always been this like push and pull back and forth, like sometimes these perspectives win out and sometimes these perspectives win out and we can cheer, you know, when our side wins and we can boo and when our side loses. But, you know, the more it's that push and pull and less of like, let's just come to the table and have a conversation about how we can actually work through this productively. We just can't get anywhere. And maybe that's just a utopian ideal that I want to live by. But boy, that just sounds so much nicer.
Yeah, but you know what?
It?
You're not pro-life if you're not pro-woman.
Yeah.
Or pro-childbearing person. You're not pro-life.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the beauty of the
not
and.
Life.
It's a both and.
The term choice is about making a choice. And there's a lot of potential outcomes mm-hmm. for any pregnancy, right? A pregnancy is not either an abortion or a live birth. There are many, many possible outcomes. And that's the beauty of choice and being pro-choice is being able to make that decision based on your health, the health of your fetus, your other potential children, your family situation. Those, I mean, that's the beauty of choice.
Yes. Now we're going to go to Trump's little Johnson. Did I say that? No, but he did something good.
That was generous.
He did something good. I mean, I don't like the guy at all, but he did something good, and I'll explain. The House on Friday cleared a key procedural hurdle in passing foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, despite dozens of Republican defections, with Democrats helping Speaker Johnson avoid a stinging defeat. Soon after, a third Republican, Paul Gosar, along with Marjorie Taylor Greene, I love her, and Thomas Massey, said he would join a threatened move to vacate the chair to basically can Trump's little Johnson. Three Republicans supporting a motion to vacate would be enough to remove Trump's little Johnson. Unless Democrats decide to help defend the Republican speaker. The bills, if passed, would provide roughly... Well, they did pass, by the way, since at the time I did this script, they did pass. Mm-hmm. So, but they passed. So $61 billion for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, and $8 billion for the Indo-Pacific. So anybody want to grab this one?
I mean, it's fantastic. This is finally passed. It's long overdue. It's frustrating that even in the passage of that aid to Ukraine, it was still very politically divided, right? Like that relied on, I mean, that was Democrats that passed it with a couple of Republicans. I will say this is the only time you'll probably ever hear me say this. Thank you, Tom Emmer, for voting for that. Shocked me. All the other Minnesota Republicans voted against it. But Tom Emmer voted in favor of it, which was good. You know, we
give credit where credit's due.
We gotta give credit where it's due.
Not everybody's just a spag. What about you, Matt?
And in addition to that, it gives me hope when I hear about bills that are passed like that where it's not all one-sided. It gives me hope that we can continue to have these conversations. And going back to what I was just saying before, meet in the middle. I guess I'm just going to keep going back to that mantra today. Like, let's just work together than apart. It makes things so much easier. And to support other people in other nations, support the growth and development of other places other than our own. It might be a tough pill to swallow because we don't have money to begin with. But board of these places need it, and they need our help, and we have the opportunity to do that. So yeah, why can't we?
Let's Matt,
find ways to do
the
that.
The big elephant in the room, though, mm-hmm. that I have to bring this up is if Ukraine were to fall, okay, then Putin's got like a boundary all around Western Europe. Right. He'd just go gobbling up those.
It's advantageous for us, too.
And the next thing you know, our boys, American boys and girls, mm-hmm.
people,
everybody will be, American people will be going there to fight a war that could have been prevented.
Exactly.
So remember, be a Churchill and not a Neville Chamberlain. That's my saying for today. Okay, so now, this one's another one that's hilarious. You guys, you would think that this is like a fiction, like when things I'm saying, but they really happen.
It reads like an Aaron Sorkin drama.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. Anyway, the Senate voted against having a trial against Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas, because the charges were determined to be unconstitutional by a majority of the senators. Now, you know, the House, impeached him, basically. Mm-hmm. It's the first time in years, I would say a century, since someone was impeached.
I think even potentially longer than that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so they turned around and they said, you don't have anything. High crimes and misdemeanors. The ceiling was not met,
mm-hmm.
or the floor. Which what would it be? The ceiling or the floor? One of those is not met. So we can't impeach him because you don't like the guy, or you don't. You know, he wears the wrong deodorant. You know, I don't know. I mean, what do you think about this, you guys? Anybody want to grab this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's so when those articles of impeachment were forwarded to the Senate. Mm-hmm. Basically, that takes precedent over anything else that the Senate is doing. All the business grinds to a halt. This is what they're dealing with. And the Senate was like, no, thank you, next. Like, they were just very quickly, we're not even going to take this up.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And you're right. The standard is high crimes and misdemeanors. And there was no high crime or misdemeanor specified. They had a lot of window dressing, no wall, no floor, no ceiling. So
no anything.
Nothing.
So can I ask you, Austin, then what does that look like in the future for things like this, where situations like this come up where it really, again, maybe this is going back to the theme that I've been answering with all my previous answers, but like us not being able to come to the table. If we can't even just have particular people in positions within our governmental system because of likes and dislikes, popularity contests, like how might this impact us in other ways in the future? Like, is it possible that some of those regulations over impeachment might be changed to allow for that? Like, if the majority of people don't like who you are, they can kick you out. You know, are they going to add that to their list of regulations? Do you see anything coming from that?
I'm not a constitutional scholar. I'm just a policy.
Yet. Oh, yet. You could have fooled
don't
me.
Sell yourself short.
So impeachment is constitutionally defined. So like to change that, we're talking about making amendments to the Constitution. Uh-huh. So really, really hard to change.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But on a more practical standpoint, like we have seen this tactic. It's expensive. It costs money. Even to do something fast and quick, you still have to pay, you know, the clerks and printing all of this. And, you know, it distracts from actual governing. And then, you know, the people that are being impeached have to go on the defensive. It's a whole nasty, icky waste of time. And we've actually seen this similar tactic, not in terms of impeachment, but into like calling into question or like, hey, we're not going to like verify appointments. Like that's been used for years at both at a federal level and at a state level. During the pandemic, Republicans in Minnesota went after a number of Governor Walz's appointments with like, hey, we're going to call you in for questioning and hearings because we don't like what you're doing, and like make it really, really hard for them to do their jobs. So it's definitely like, in terms of changing like the Constitution for impeachment, I don't think would happen, but it's a tactic.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We are going to take a short break because we have to pay the bills. I am Philip Anthony. This is the Downright Upright Show on AM 950,
woo!
The progressive voice of
Minnesota.
Oh, Welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. My name is Philip Anthony. The song is called Stormy because Stormy is in court today. By the way, I don't think my co-hosts know this, but that song that was just playing was me.
What?
What?
I used to sing, I told you. And this song was so apropos, that's why I was talking in secret to Patrick. I used to sing. I was in a studio, and I used to do a lot of demo work. And that was one of the... We wanted to do a dance version of Stormy, and we didn't know that Stormy Daniels would be a thing.
Philip Anthony, how dare you not share that song with us?
Yeah. First of all, where do I get the track?
It's honestly only on YouTube. I never got
great.
A deal.
On YouTube. Deal.
Never got a deal. They played it in a couple of clubs in New York. I did like a Madonna. I put the cassette in the machine, the DJ booth.
I love that.
Yeah. Anyway, but the trial is on as we speak.
Yeah.
This is a pre-recorded show, as you know. But David Pecker, the editor-in-chief of The Inquirer, is the first witness. I don't know. I can't wait for Stormy. Stormy, when she gets on the stand, that's going to be amazing. But anyway, I'm going to read this to you about the trial. They found the jury. They got the whole jury there, yeah, obviously, and they have five alternate jurors, so it makes up 12 jurors and five alternates. So they have a full panel now, and the judge has said he expects. Just opening statements today when it started, but they got David Pecker to start talking, so they have him on the stand, introducing him. Also, a man set himself on fire the other day, if you heard about this, in front of the courthouse. I don't
awful.
Know what his issue is. We have a mental health issue in this country. Big time problem. That's why we need health care for everybody, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whatever it is, we need health care.
And pro-choice options. And let a person make their own choices rather than have their choices made for them.
Yeah. Health care for all.
Health care for
all. No matter who you are, you should have health care.
Mm-hmm.
So any thoughts about this Stormy
trial?
That is trial?
An earworm. Oh, my gosh.
I can't sing like that anymore. Anyway, what do you think?
You can start. I started all
you're
the
such
last
a good,
ones.
No, you did. I know, and I'm so thankful for that. Okay, well, here's the thing. this trial is just what you said Trump and Z earlier, and that's how I just feel. Like, this is more media attention that we're giving to Donald Trump that I wish I didn't have to learn about him every day. I wish I didn't have to be
Voldemort,
in the know of
Voldemort.
Voldemort constantly, because I feel like my mental health is being just – eradicated just due to the constant media attention to him. At the same time, of course, I'm curious to see where this trial goes, because I think it is a really strong marker of maybe how things could play out as the year continues on. And I know
CNN is doing a play-by-play.
Right.
It's crazy.
Because we're all interested. We all want to see, and we all want to know where things are going to go with this, because it is going to determine a lots of conversations as we get closer and closer to the election, how this is going to play a role in it. It should have played a stronger role back when he was elected back in 2016, and somehow it did not, but that's another issue of sexism in this country that we need to get over, and gender issues.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think in this particular case, I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm also really terrified to see where it goes. Looking at how people are acting and reacting, the person who lit themselves on fire is like, for lack of a better word, just alarming. It's horrific.
Yeah.
It's so sad to think we're at this state where someone feels like they need to do that in order to make a point or make a statement, and because of choices that Donald Trump makes and how this is going to continue to evolve and impact
You know what else, though, Matt? I'm hearing this through reporting, you know, people that are in the courtroom. He's continually farting throughout the trial.
Yeah.
And sleeping.
And sleeping.
Throughout the trial. They had to wake him up four times, and he has the nerve to call the president, President Biden, Sleepy Joe.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
His disrespect for the American public, for our judicial system, for our press, for any human being that disagrees with him is not deserving of my vote. Just say that.
Absolutely. But you know, Austin, Don Snorleone is trending on Twitter right now.
I love that.
Well,
did you hear that?
Well crafted.
I love that. I did not. I did not hear that, but I love that.
Don Snorleone. I love it.
Love it.
Do you have any comments about this zoo?
I mean, in a zoo, a trumpansy, like those are all fantastic terms. This is, I will give New York credit. They have really strict laws about media in the courtroom, which is why there are like Associated Press reporters inside, but not live stream feed that we're seeing, which is great. And I think that is very important. My paramount concern is for juror safety. Wow. That is a horrifying, terrible prospect. And we've already seen instances where one woman, asked to be released because people identified her based on the information that was released in the media. I don't need to know how tall these people are or where they work.
No. Yeah.
None of that is important.
Well, the judge, to his credit, he forbade the media mm-hmm. from doing that again. Mm-hmm. No yeah. more, because we're losing jurors. We can't afford that. You know, we want to keep the people we have. You know, we go down under, you know, the minimum, we have to start this whole trial over. It's a mistrial.
I'm wondering who all the impartial people are. I cannot be impartial in a jury with Donald Trump.
Yeah, right. Who's impartial?
Also, he's not my peer. So the jury of peers, like, who are his peers? Like, he's on a different level of
Were you
craziness
living on,
and
under
hierarchy.
A rock all these years?
Well, and, right. like, I, you know, again, oh, I don't want to give out, like, information in terms of identifying, but, like, one of the people that they had put on the jury, they had specified something like they've been, like, living in isolation for 6 months, like, at a private residence and not – you know, paying attention to media or anything. Like, mm-hmm. so, I mean, that would be a heck of a life. But yeah, not peers to most of us in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I had two other things I wanted to talk about, but mm-hmm. let's just talk about one because I want your issues to be brought up because we're going to do 10 minutes of in this segment on one of your issues and the last 10 minutes on the other co-host issue. So President Biden canceled student debt for 277,000 borrowers. Now, why isn't that getting any... Why is Voldemort getting all the press? And the president just helped 277,000 people.
Media
is that
attention.
More important?
Media attention.
That he slept with Stormy Daniels? I mean...
Yes. We're all looking at Donald Trump. Everyone cares about Donald Trump. The first thing I hear every day, if you pop on the news, the first thing you're going to hear about is Donald Trump. What, even as a president, I knew what he tweeted every day. I didn't have Twitter. I don't need to know what my president is tweeting. And frankly, I don't care. And also, he shouldn't be tweeting the things that he was. But that's the thing is, like, we are so ingrained and knowledgeable about what's happening in his world. And what's unfortunate is that those are not ideals to live up to. Joe Biden's move on that part, that's a fantastic move to help support the American people and help support our economy in ways that he can be productive. I think that's beautiful and fantastic. But we care about Trump. We want to see
not
this,
me.
This is why we no, not me either.
not
we. This is why reality TV is so big. It's interesting to see real people in wild situations, and Donald Trump is the reality TV star.
I wish there was a button you could push. And that he would disappear.
The ejector seat?
Yeah, like something. Because it's just so overwhelming.
Thanos
for me.
Snap.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, look. Insulin is capped at $35 now because of the president, President Biden.
Yes. Thank goodness for
children,
that.
Students. I shouldn't say children. Students got relief on their student loans. 277,000 people. And that's not counting the people he helped before, prior to this one. I could go a green energy he's promoting. He's promoting LGBT rights. He passed that law that gays and lesbians could get married. You can't erase that in a state, in the country, I should say. It's federal, not state. But there's so many things. I can't even go on. But yeah, Austin, say something.
I was just going to say, this is a wonderful step in terms of student loan debt. And I'm frustrated we're not hearing more about it, in part because two really key deadlines with that forgiveness are coming up very soon. And, you know, I want to be really clear. This is a great thing that President Biden has done. It is also way, way, way short of where we need to go terms of student loan debt.
Absolutely.
But for people that are, it's called IDR repayment. It's like the end of April. Like, you need to get all this stuff filed because there's going to be a pause on filing for that. So for people that are borrowers that have been paying off their debt for 20 to 25 years is who the majority of people that are getting forgiveness under this. And, you know, it's a scary, sad thing that people have been paying debt for 20, 25 years, but that is
the
reality.
Hello. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But anyway, now it's time for Austin Ball Hagen's part of the
Austin
show.
Austin Corner.
The Austin Corner. Yeah, I like that. You guys should name your corners. We'll use your name. We'll come up with something.
We'll figure something
out. And then we have Matt's Corner after that. So let's start with Austin's Corner.
Yeah, and I'm going to keep this brief because I really want to touch. I loved the DEI stuff we did last month when we recorded, and yeah, definitely needs more focus. So I'm going to keep this really brief. I want to give a big shout out to Michael Howard and Lindsay Port, who have been doing amazing work in terms of like housing accessibility and really trying to tackle the housing crisis. It's unfortunate that those bills are not going to go anywhere this cycle. Unfortunately, they've kind of dropped off the DFL agenda, and that's not, you know, that's not because of their work. I know they have worked really hard to get this done and have had broad support from different housing associations, organizations, community support, and other legislatures. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of pushback from cities in terms of wanting to get this done, and the League of Minnesota Cities or City of Minnesota League, I forget the name. But it's unfortunate that that's not going to go further because housing is a big crisis, and there were historic investments in housing. Hopefully, this is something that can come up next cycle. But it's just at a point in the cycle that it's not unfortunately going to happen this year in Minnesota. So
I know.
Yeah, disappointing.
Really disappointing.
Can you plot like what certain things are coming from? I don't know enough about this, to be honest. What are some proposals?
So one of the proposals that they had would change the way that zoning laws work in Minnesota. So it would take a lot of that away from cities and put it at a state level. And a lot of cities were like, ooh, pearl clutch, like you can't take away our right to zoning. But there are other states that do this. This is how Washington does it. Montana does it. So there's definitely like some precedent.
It's effective there too, or they found it to be effective?
It can be an effective strategy. And so with that, like it would open up the space and the ability for more multifamily housing. Another separate proposal with that would have allowed like more homes to be made into duplexes or zoned as duplexes, and like less restrictions with like people putting like tiny homes up or like what's called mother-in-law suites. There's a lot of restrictions that got put in place around the Super Bowl with housing that are really restrictive to people in terms of how they want to potentially rent their house or build or construct things because they didn't want all these like Airbnbs popping up on the fly around the Super Bowl, and those, you know, rules are still in place, and it makes it really hard. And there's also, I think, a lot of NIMBYism, like I don't want a big multifamily complex moving into my neighborhood. So their proposals would have kind of cut through a lot of hurdles to building more multifamily housing, and unfortunately they're just didn't get a hearing in the House. And
but you know, it's funny. Excuse me, Austin, but it's funny. You hear the Republicans all the time. Whenever you go to a Democratic city, am I doing a good imitation?
Yeah, it's horrifying. Yes, please.
Whenever you go to a Democratic city, there's tents, people sleeping on the street, and all that. Well, duh.
Yeah.
Maybe we should invest in housing.
Well, and they're
just
new.
Just saying,
and maybe
for
have
a friend.
Little, maybe have a little sympathy, empathy for those people rather than judgmental.
Yeah, they're you human know, they're, beings.
That's a, not an easy thing for them to go through, without question.
Oh
and
my
there's
God.
There's a lot of mentality out there thinking that, well, they chose that particular life.
No, they didn't. And some of them have mental health issues going on. You know, and they
so
need help
mental
too.
Health. Absolutely.
We need to help our people, man.
We do.
We have to stop this demonization. It's got to stop. Anyway. Moving right along. Austin, did you have anything else in Minnesota politics you wanted to discuss?
I just read shortly before I came in, Governor Walz is appointing two women to the Minnesota Supreme Court, which is fantastic, to replace two outgoing judges. Yeah. And nice. So that's awesome. That's exciting. Great news.
Yeah. Yes. We're going to make some change.
Let's keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am woman, hear me roar, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, going back to, I hate to keep bringing this up about abortion, but, you know, at least in Minnesota, you know, women can go to the doctor. And if the doctor sees an aberration of some sort, the doctor can treat the woman. It's health care for the woman and the childbearing person. We really are 10 leaps ahead of all the other states in that department, right, Austin?
Well, absolutely. And I, you know, I'll share with y'all and with the listeners, you know, my spouse and I, part of why we got married is we were at a stage where we want to start trying for kids. And I don't think we would be doing that if we didn't live in Minnesota. Like, if we still lived in Iowa, that would be a solid no, just because there are so many things that can happen with a pregnancy. I don't want to live somewhere where I don't have access to full and complete health care for that.
Yeah, well, your child is going to have Uncle Philip and Uncle Matt spoiling the hell out of that baby.
What a
right?
fun guest they'll be. Right? Oh, my gosh.
Right?
We'll have the little whippersnappers. Oh, well, welcome to the Downright Upright Show. Did you have anything else to say? We have three.
No.
You have three more, four more minutes. Unless you want to,
you want to cede your
time.
I loved the DEI stuff we did last month. Like that was
dominant
awesome.
Dominant culture traits, characteristics, and I can't tell you how much I've already thought about dominant culture characteristics in our conversation today. It's hard for me not to. It's almost one of those like it's hard for me to click off the DEI brain sometimes. Just in conversations, I'll catch myself even on it, you know, which is a good thing. It's that awareness, right? That is a blessing for the work that I get to do outside of this.
Well, to remind the,
it's also challenging.
Yes, it is challenging. Yes. And to remind the listeners, we were talking last week about white privilege. Is that right, Matt?
Dominant culture characteristics white supremacy culture characteristics, however you want to view it. They're very one and the same. White supremacy is often deemed it's kind of a – people hear that and they kind of tighten up a little bit, you know? Like
right.
That doesn't rub me the right way. I don't want to live in – I'm not white supremacist. I don't believe in those things. You might not, and yet you still live and breathe it.
Yeah,
whether
exactly.
you know it or not. Yeah. So it's creating the awareness mm-hmm. of what it is, that white supremacy culture, a lot of those characteristics. So, yeah, we named a few of those last time, some different examples of dominant culture characteristics. But, yeah, we can certainly talk about more because there's a whole list. I'll tell you
what.
You
got 2.5 minutes for this, so and then you have the whole next segment just for you,
okay,
Matt.
Well, and we can continue talking about this. I think here's the thing, and I want you two both just to like pipe in, you know, and just because I think this is interesting content, and when we can make our own personal connections to the content and our own realizations, our own understandings, you know, speaking from this I and me perspective, like here's what I have seen, here's how I have experienced it, that helps – really solidify it more in your heads too. So for the listeners at home or in the car or wherever you are, I ask you to do the same as well. How have you seen these characteristics play out for you as well? So here's another example of dominant culture characteristics is qualifications. Is this person qualified to say these things, to do these things, and how can they prove that? So for example, how many degrees do you have? Did you graduate high school? Or did you drop out and therefore you didn't deserve to have this? How long have you been doing this particular job before you're able to do that? What qualifications do the three of us have to be speaking here on these microphones? These are this idea of qualifications, that there's something that you have done in order to prove yourself worthy of that. Mm-hmm. I can tell you in my experience, I've taught middle schoolers through adults, right? I've been in middle schools, I've been in high schools, and now for years I've been working with adults, going on 10 years now I've been working with adults, right? And I've done 10 years with the middle schoolers and high schoolers. And I'll tell you that learning is very similar in all of those realms, regardless of age. A lot of it comes down to that mentality of, well, when you're younger, you look at who is the person who's qualified to give you information? Your teachers, right? Your parents. It's those elder people. Older people, who do we look at? Mm-hmm. Who do we look at for telling us?
You're asking
I'm asking, who?
Oh, me?
Yeah,
super, both of you. I think we're taught to look towards people that are in supervisory positions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean as far as work is concerned?
Yep, or just in general, yep. Someone in authority
Parents.
And power. Right. So think about
Leaders.
These qualifications. What's a qualification for being the American president? You have to be how old?
35.
Do you know how many people do you know that are 35 and older that you would never trust to be a president?
Oh, yeah, big
many.
Time.
And how many people are 35 or younger that you don't know?
Yeah. We're going to come back after this mm-hmm. next break, and we're going to talk more about white privilege and more with Matt Amundson. My name is Philip Anthony. This is the Downright Upright Show here on AM 950, Woo-hoo! The progressive voice
of Minnesota. Welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. My name is Philip Anthony. I am the host, along with my friends and co-hosts, Austin Ballhagen and Matt Amundsen. We were talking about DEI and about white privilege. And let's pick up
qualifications, yes.
Qualifications with Matt Amundsen.
So, Philip, you had a question. What was your question?
I'm confused.
A clarification. Yeah, please.
A clarification about qualifications.
Yeah.
So when someone is qualified for something, are you trying to say that maybe because of that, for example, the 35 years and older to be president, and because the person's older than that, they may not be qualified, you're saying? Is that right? That not all the time does that parameter work out?
Sure. Yeah, not all the time does that parameter work out. That's a good way to say it. So the point I wanted to make, we ran out of time. But point being, we get to these points of expectation. We expect someone to be at a certain level of understanding. How many times did you hear as a child, you're old enough, you should know better? Maybe I haven't learned that yet. So how can my age determine my knowledge level or experience, right?
Yeah.
I'm over 35. I don't trust myself to be president. Just because I meet that qualification doesn't – and I was born in America. I meet those qualifications, but I should not be president. I don't want to be president. I don't have that skill set. I don't have that knowledge. I don't have that interest or drive.
Neither would I.
But I meet some of the qualifications, right?
Yes.
So when you think about someone who's qualified, there's also experience. There's also that drive too. My experience might be different than someone who's younger than me, might be someone different than someone else too. There are 5-year-olds that have experiences that are deeper, stronger, more impactful to them than I have experienced because I haven't lived the life that they have. So what makes me qualified to make a choice over a choice that they may have? They have their own lived experience. They have their own life. Therefore, they're more qualified. But typically we look at, well, it's a degree or it's an amount of time I've worked somewhere or the amount of knowledge that I have. But that doesn't necessarily make me all qualified. It comes down to experience. It comes down to who we are as people, the worldviews that we create all around us. Qualifications we often see as like a degree or something that we put time and energy and money into creating, but that's not always true.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there are people that have high school diploma who are so much more intelligent than people who have a PhD.
Harder working, too.
Just naturally intelligent people. So that's a good point.
And can be harder working. They may even have better paying jobs. Just because there's an expectation of, well, you get a high school degree and then you can get any job you want. You get a college degree and you get any job you want. Mm-hmm. We're learning more and more, and younger generations are learning more and more, that has not been true. So why am I going to put all this time and money and effort into doing that thing if that's not what's going to get me success, or if that's not the thing that's going to make me happy, mm-hmm. right? But we see that, well, this will make you qualified. But it's been proven time and again that does not make you qualified.
Yeah, but isn't the opposite of that true, too? Because, like, for example, most presidents have been white.
Yeah.
We had one that wasn't. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You and I and Austin would probably not ever become president for the fact that we're in the LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
God, we don't want them, you know. So what do you think about that? The opposite of qualification being like a drawback.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I'm not trying to say that, well, teachers, you don't need to have a teaching degree to become a teacher. You don't need a law degree to practice law. Yeah. You need to earn those degrees in order to do that. You need to have those lived experiences too. But also the way in which we view qualification is so limiting, right? That we need to allow ourselves to live in more of a gray area. I know that can be very challenging for many people to think about because it's tough. Well, I want the answer. I want black and white. I want this or that. And that was one of the connections we talked about last time. Remember, if you remember that, we were talking about that either or thinking was an example we talked about last month, is another example of that white dominant culture, that white supremacy culture. Is this idea of it has to be one thing versus the other. Well, if you have this degree, if you have this level, you are therefore qualified to do this job. Mm-hmm. But that should not necessarily be a marker. It's more just what I'm trying to bring to you is just like, let's be more mindful and cognizant to think about different experiences that people have, that life experiences that we have, and how that can help evolve us and understand the world a little bit better.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and how we weigh titles and degrees. Mm-hmm. I feel like some people collect titles and use them to to breed other titles. You know, they just advance up very rapidly based on, well, I got A, so now I'm going to run for B or volunteer for B or whatever. And it all just spirals. And, like, they're really not qualified for those things. It's like buying a house where they buy a tiny little house and then they use that to buy a bigger house. And, like, it just, you know, it's I don't know.
Yeah.
If I'm making sense. Oh,
absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. Do you have another bullet point on that area?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot in that dominant culture. And, you know, again, a lot of it is just thinking about how is this applying to me, right? And some of this is going to come for both of you and for those listening. You might still be questioning it, and that's an okay thing to question, right? Or pushing away from it, holding that apart from you, but try to lean into that thinking and try to think, oh, why am I feeling defensive, or why am I denying this? And maybe try to think, and you can still deny it. I'm not saying you have to agree with these, but also give space and room for these things just to breathe and just be aware of them as well, right? Because they are common. I didn't make up this list, right? These are common issues that we will see.
Yeah.
Another one is fear of open conflict.
Explain that.
Ever heard Minnesota nice?
passive aggressive.
You've lived in Minnesota for a very long time, but you were not born in Minnesota. You were not raised in Minnesota. So what is your understanding of Minnesota nice?
Passive aggressiveness, I guess. But see, you know, I think I explained this on another show, right? When I talked about it, I kind of like that better. You know, I don't want the screaming at me and you FFF person, you know, and getting all angry.
Yeah.
Even though you hate me, as long as you respect me in my face, mm-hmm. I think I can handle that better because I get stressed out too easy when I'm confronted. Like, you parked in my spot, you know. Like in New York, they do that a lot.
See, and that's also a behavior, right? Like, you can still have open conflict without there being that sort of screaming, you know, Karen talk and those are like, or name calling, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's okay to have open conflict. But how do we do that in ways that are not causing more harm, right? But instead are putting up your boundaries and saying, this is what I want. This is what I need. How do I understand your point of view and let you know my point of view as well,
mm-hmm.
right? And sometimes there's this avoidance altogether. I think sometimes often comes out as passive aggression, which is actually pretty just really aggressive. I think more often than not, it just because we understand passive aggression so well, I think that becomes just aggressive because, oh, that was just rude.
Could you give me an example, though, of, because you're in Minnesota.
Fear of open conflict or of passive aggression?
Like of a really severe version of passive aggressiveness.
Mm.
Can somebody be passive aggressive and still stress out the other person or hurt their feelings?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
100%. Okay. 110%.
I think I hear passive aggression or I've experienced passive aggression sometimes where I'm reading the subtext from what this person is saying and perhaps how they're saying it. Instead of directly telling me what their thoughts and feelings are, they're showing it in another way.
And being disrespectful at the same
time? And it can come out as disrespectful where I feel a sense of like harm, right? Because I am recognizing this person is making a comment that's meant to kind of dig at me of something that I said or something that I did. And instead of telling me, hey, I didn't like this or hey, I'd rather have you do that, they're instead making a comment that is making me diminishing who I am as a person or diminishing my thoughts or feelings, right? Mm-hmm. That's that fear of open conflict that comes out in passive aggression, right? Is that instead of just like saying, hey, that hurt my feelings or hey, I'd prefer if you didn't do that, we ignore or we brush it aside or we bottle it up. I'm saying the collective we, not every single person does that, right? And in some situations we do and some we don't. But that fear of open conflict is like, well, I don't like how that person did it, and so I'm not gonna say anything. Or maybe we're too afraid to say something to our boss or our supervisor, right? And so I'm just gonna bottle it in because I'm too afraid to say something because I'm worried about retaliation.
Yeah. I wish I can be more confrontational, Austin.
So
you know, I mean
we talked about this in the car.
I'm like you. I'm like more of a pacifist. I'm like, you know, all right, you ran over my cat, you know. I mean, in New York they would like literally like almost beat the hell out of you for doing that. But anyway.
Well, maybe you can reflect on that. What does that mean? How might you do that?
Yeah.
Now you can start being actionable.
Yeah. Well, I would be very angry, but I don't know if I'd beat the hell out of them. Anyway, I would love to thank all of you, my two co-hosts are amazing.
And I would like, all as our are listeners.
You. And the listeners, absolutely. Thank you all for joining in today on the Downright Upright Show with Philip Anthony. And if you have any questions or anything you want to say, go to downrightuprightshow@gmail.com. You can ask Matt, you can ask Austin or me a question, and we'll get back to you about it. All right? We love you. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in.